Here.
Senator Kaler. Co-Chair Moffitt.
Here.
Senator Murphy. Representative Nekritz.
Yes.
Representative Poe. Representative Riley.
Here.
Senator Rose. Senator Steens.
Here.
Senator Severson. Co-Chair Trotter.
Here.
Representative Eunice.
Seven being present, we have a quorum. I want to welcome everyone to Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability. I'm State Senator Trotter, duly appointed to be co-chair. My fellow co-chair from the House, Representative Donald Moffitt.
Thank you, Senator. Certainly, I look forward to working with you and the other members of COGFA. Look forward to it. Obviously, accurate information for the budget is the number one crucial item to we make decisions. So, looking forward to it. Thank you.
Have our fellow.
Thank you, Senator. We'd also like to welcome two other new members, Senator Heather Steens, welcome, and Representative Michael Eunice, welcome. Forward to it. And with that, turn it back to.
No, okay.
Well, next item on the agenda is from Chief Economist Edward Boss Jr., and he has a couple different items: economic forecast and revenue estimate, and then revenue update. So we'll turn it over to you and anyone. And then Jim Machinsky with the revenue manager. So appreciate that. And I'd like for the clerk to add Representative Poe to the roll. So with that, Mr. Boss, and then.
Both Jim and I are going to be using this handout with the blue cover on it. I'm going to go over quickly the state of the economy, both nationwide and some in particulars with Illinois, and also some comments into how Illinois differs not only with the nation but also with surrounding states. I thought the easiest way to do this is just look what's been happening to the economy over the last several years. So the first chart shows gross domestic product growth just for the years 1980 through 2014. This was a period that covered five recessions, followed by recoveries and expansions. It includes, as you see below the line, contractions covering the twin recessions in the 1980s, the brief recession in 1990-91, the very mild one at the beginning of 2001, which, when you put it through the quarters, actually didn't turn out to be a decline. And then, of course, the last one being in the Great Recession, which began at the end of 2007 and continued until June 2009. As you can see, the growth has been, while erratic on a quarterly basis, pretty much trapped in a 2.5% rate for the last 5 years. And I say, because it's been very uneven, we had a few quarters last year where you had 4.6% growth, 5% growth. We're really going to go, the economy's really turned around after a negative 2.1 in the first quarter, only to have the final quarter come in at 2.6, lowered again to 2.2. At the end of this month, we'll get the final revision, and it's possible, I'd say probably likely, that that'll be revised a little lower than that, mainly due to. And you notice that this 2.5% growth is well below the recoveries following previous recessions. So we're sort of stuck in that range, hoping to get out of it one of these days with a little faster growth. I talked about gross domestic product. I thought the easiest way to do this is let's go through the major sectors of it. Where the different, why so slow. And the first, of course, is the consumer, represented by several charts here, but just looking at retail sales, they've been going up, but as you can see, there's been periods where it hasn't been that robust. In fact, in January, sales were up a modest, January this year was up a modest 3.3% from January a year ago, and these are not seasonally adjusted numbers, so you'd have to take out inflation from that. Very modest. Another consumer-related item is housing, of course, and we look at new single-family home sales. Now, it's interesting to look at the housing sector because overall, if you look at prices, they have not only recovered where they were, but are at new highs. However, if you look at a lot of that was done because it was easy financing and it was building units being built for renters, et cetera, that had easy access to credit. New single-family homes sold, however, has improved, but very modestly, compared to where it had been. And that's important. You've got to look at new construction because that's what fits in the GDP. And 90% of the home sales are existing homes. That's just the transfer of financial assets. It doesn't add to growth at all. Illinois has been even harder hit. In fact, in which I know you've all received the state of Illinois. This is independent, done by Moody's Analytics for us every year. We have them do a forecast, and their analysis that what's hit Illinois' economy, besides its fiscal condition, is the fact that most of the growth that has occurred has centered around the Chicago area. Downstate has really suffered, so you almost got two economies going. And part of the reason is the fact that the job growth has not kept up with the nation or the Midwest. And if you want to look again to the housing area and centered in a little on Illinois, before you can get a new housing started, you have to have a permit. So this shows Illinois building permits for single-family homes. And you can see while there's been some improvement in the last year or so, you can see it's actually well below where it had been. Moreover, you see a little downtick in the last month or two, and that's primarily because mortgage rates, as low as they are starting to edge up. And on the affordability index, homes are becoming less affordable than they had been. So I don't see any quick turnaround right now in that. If we turn from the consumer, let's turn to business. And this shows what they call the Purchasing Managers Index. This is all manufacturing. And they survey it. There's a Chicago survey, and there's total for the nation. And as long as that number is above the line or 50% or more, the economy is expanding. As you noticed in the very last, the Chicago index fell sharply, the lowest level since April of 2013. Now, that might be partly weather-related. They're not exactly the same. As you can see, it fluctuates a lot more, but it generally is on the same trend that the national level. So business, manufacturing, particularly in Illinois, this has been a weak employment sector, which it in delayed. Again, it is expanding, but at a relatively modest pace compared to where we had been. The next chart, basically the economy is, in the United States, has turned more from manufacturing to the service sector. And so the non-manufacturing index is done on the same basis. That is, as long as the line's above 50%, things are expanding. Below, they're contracting. As you can see, they've been expanding since the recovery began. But again, the pace of expansion is moderate compared to where we had been in the early 2000s. So while it's continuing to add, at a modest pace, which is one of the reasons we're getting this 2.5% growth. Another sector, and this one's interesting because the others aren't, but the fact that you've got to look at net trade. Now, it only consists of 13% of our total GDP, but Illinois is the fifth largest exporter, so it's important to us. Europe accounts for about 20% of our imports, our exports. And as you can see, they've pretty well flattened out after a nice recovery early on, and lately have been actually declining somewhat. In fact, from January to January a year ago, they're down 3%. I'm sorry, from January, from the month before, they're down 3%. They're down 5.3% from a year ago. Now, a lot of things are happening here that are tough for exporters. One is the value of the dollar has gone up so appreciably that we become, our items become more and more expensive bought overseas. And the other, of course, is that a lot of these economies have slowed down, particularly today. The market's going in the tank because of problems in Greece and so forth. I shouldn't say this. I'm going to be called politically incorrect, but I heard it on TV. It's the pigs. It's Portugal, Ireland, Greece, Spain. Anyway, and that seems to be the problem, or what Churchill used to say was the soft belly of Europe. So all of these things are driving up expenses for Europeans, et cetera, to buy our goods. So that doesn't look real positive going forward until some of these problems are solved. But saving the best to last, the big problem has been the employment situation. This is United States employment, both measured by the household survey, which is where the unemployment rate is derived from, as well as the establishment survey, which actually goes to employers and looks at how many people. It's a harder data. And as you can see, both of them now have surpassed their previous peak before the recession began. However, it's taken them 5 years to get there. Extremely long period of time. But at least we're there. Jobs are being added. If you look at Illinois on the same basis, jobs are being added here too. The problem is we have yet to not only surpass where we were before the recession began, but we hadn't even made up the jobs lost during the previous recession. So it makes the gap even harder to get a new record level. If you look at unemployment rates, on the next chart you can see both have come down, surprising most people, actually, rapidly. Late in 2006, we had a 4.4% inflation rate. We reached a high of 10% in October 2009, and of February, which just came out, we're at 5.5%. The biggest problem with that is that more and more people are out of the labor force. Now, some of it's retirement. We're getting to that. Others are just inability for economic reasons, not being able to find a job. In fact, if you look at the next chart, on chart 11, this is what they call the U6 series. It's those unemployed plus those marginally attached plus total employment part-time, not for individual reasons, but for economic reasons. And there it's also come down. But still, in February, which just came out the other day, where it was 5.5% unemployment rate nationwide, it was 11% for the U2 rate series. Finally, how does this, shape up with what's happening in other areas? So this next chart shows unemployment rates for the U.S., the Midwest, and Illinois. Now, you'll notice that in the latest, all we have is the 5.7 here, but now it's 5.5 for the U.S. They are doing new benchmark series, so we actually won't get Illinois' unemployment rate or the Midwest. I think March 12th. And so we don't have that comparison there. But as you can see, in 2007, we weren't that far different, the Midwest, Illinois, and the U.S. Then right around 2010, we began to see divergence. And that continued, where there was some improvement made last year in the difference. Part of that reason comes in the types of job that Illinois has. For example, in that monthly piece that we do, the second article shows that actually if you look at construction jobs, we're down, we haven't matched what we had two, three years ago. Partly that's because we are less auto-related manufacturing, and of course that's where the boom's been in as the average age of a cow is 11 and a half years old, so you got to buy one. We don't, it doesn't help overall Illinois as much as some of our states. And part of it is because of the slow improvement in housing in Illinois, cut down the number or the size of the increase in construction. Now, these are both highly paid jobs. So even within Illinois, the growth in jobs, particularly downstate, like I said, we have almost two different economies going on here, has meant that the cost of the labor situation is different from where we're being around us. That's why we're having more low-paid job available than it. We're not getting particularly job. Next chart shows this is a forecast done by Global Insight, which is the same forecasting service that the Bureau of the Budget uses in the budget, etc., and it gives three different scenarios, the one being the basic a scenario which has about they give it a 70% odds of occurring, other a more optimistic upturn, and a pessimistic. The next chart actually shows the numbers of that baseline forecast. This is on a fiscal year basis, so you get some kind of quirky things in the overall numbers. It looks like we went from 2014 from 1.8 to 3.7 this fiscal year. Well, the reason is the way the economy was so sporadic. Like I said, we started out negative growth, then we had a burst of growth, we went lower growth. If you did it on an annual basis, like the first chart I showed you, those figures would have been 2.4 for 2014, not 1.8. and 3.0 for 2015 instead of 3.7. And more, also, if you look further out in their forecast, you have 2.7 growth for 16, 2.8 growth for 17, 2.6 for 2018. So from a longer-term forecast, we're still going to be stuck basically in this range. The next forecast is on an annual basis, and it's for Illinois. Again, it's gross state product, which I have to say cannot be totally compared to gross domestic. A lot of people do it. We don't have a gross domestic product for Illinois, but we do have a gross state product. There's similarities, but you can't. It's not one's not a part of the other. And there we'd have this is from Global Insight as well. You can see the growth rates are staying in that 2% range going. So that's about what we see. We see, as I said, in the monthly, deja vu. We've been 5 years of moderate growth, and it still looks like we're going to be stuck there for a while. The revenue impact, Jim will get into on that. But I'll take any questions you might have.
Okay. Representative Riley has a question.
Thank you. It's always enlightening. But aren't a lot of these variables sort of proxy variables for other things? For example, housing is slow to recover. But that's because when the bubble occurred, there was a lot of building. You know, my area may not be representative of some other areas, but I think in many ways they are. I've got $800,000 homes that are empty. There was a lot of building going on, and so we've sort of just caught up with some of that. So isn't part of that lag because of the housing glut?
It is. I'll give you a better example. I shouldn't say better. My example.
All right.
My mother passed away about 5-6 years ago. I got her condo, the last one in her building, in Elk Grove Village. Sold for $148,000. I put it up for $140,000. Sold it 3 years later for $47,000. Today, and that was a glut. What happened was a whole bunch of bankers got together, lent to developers, and they built massive condominiums all around it. So you're right. That does account.
And other factors, and sometimes it gets ideological, but just in terms of sheer numbers, and we talk about unemployment and we haven't recovered, and no one talks about types of employment. Types of employment. Public sector employment. To 2007, you know, when sort of Star of the Beast started going on, a lot of states had to let a lot of people go, including this state. And if you look at that across all states, a lot of unemployment were people who had public sector jobs that are just gone. A lot of private sector jobs are just gone and will never be recovered because many of those jobs have gone offshore. So I think it's very important when we talk about, you know, this happened, you got to look into the reasons why it did. Otherwise, you just have numbers and folks can attach all kinds of significance to them. But that's the fact. You know, public sector employment has just really, you know, fallen off. And that had a lot to do with, you know, the national unemployment rates. But folks don't really always, you know, talk about that. The other thing, too, in terms of sales, when you look at sales data, people have to have a propensity to consume. And if they don't have any money, they're not going to buy. So isn't there a correlation between sales, looking at retail sales, and the fact that real wages have not increased for a lot of people?
Yeah, and I think there's another factor, too. If you look at the latest data last week that came out on income and spending, income actually went up, spending went down again. So there's a lot of trepidations about people going out and spending more.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Riley. Next, Representative Yunus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Boss, thank you for your presentation. I appreciate it very much. On page 13, when you were talking about unemployment rates, the graph that shows the unemployment rate compared to the U6 series.
Right.
That graph is nationwide, is that correct? That
yes.
Is not a,
yes.
Do we have a U6 series figure for the state?
I don't think, sure they don't. I look at their stuff, employment security. But it probably wouldn't be that much different. A lot of it is. I mean, the gap probably is exaggerated, quite honestly, because we are getting the baby boomers retiring and there's, you know, people dropping out of the labor force. Not all like me. I'll be 77 on Friday, but I'm only working part-time. So, yeah, I don't think they do have it for that. I try to get as much state-oriented stuff as possible, why through the housing permits and some comparisons. And
but you think it's safe to assume the gap will be pretty similar to what
I suspect we're going to do, and again, this is a quirk, and data can have quirks, as you mentioned. We're going to start looking better with what they consider the Census Bureau of the Midwest. Why? Because we're producing so much oil in the states with 2.8% unemployment rate that they're now laying off people, so their rate's going to start going up in their overall Midwest grouping. So we'll start looking a lot better against the Midwest than we have the last few years. You know, Illinois will probably continue to some of these forecasts on the yearly basis for Illinois, I think, over exaggerate the slowdown coming in Illinois. I think it's going to start looking better in spite of some of these.
Thank you. And again, thank you for your presentation.
Thank you, Representative Yunus. Next, seeking recognition, Representative Nekritz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Welcome aboard. Ed, can I go to the Moody's Analytics report?
Sure.
Because I thought it was a very balanced sort of view of what's right in Illinois and what's wrong and where we are.
We try to stay out of it.
And we do this every year, and Moody's does this every year at COGFA's request. And do you guys do anything with that other than just hand it out and say this is what Moody's says about us?
We don't try to prejudge them or to judge after the fact. If something looks really stupid, I might say, hey, Aaron, you know, would you double-check this?
Uh-huh.
But we don't try to. I mean, that's the beauty of having an independent study. There's some things in here I don't like and I don't agree with.
Well, let me.
But overall, I thought it was a job well done and very impartial.
It feels that way to me. It feels impartial, and I was especially struck. And I don't remember this in years past, that it really was sort of a tale of two states, that you know, had the growth in the Chicago area, and then downstate seemed to be really struggling much more, in large measure because of the export issue seemed to be have a much greater impact downstate.
This guy, I mean, that's his whole life.
Yeah.
I mean, he knows more about Illinois than any of us.
Okay. So there's a few things in here that seem to run counter to a lot of the political rhetoric that goes on, and a lot of the discussion that we have, especially, I would say, you know, periodically on the House floor. And so I just wanted to highlight a couple of those things. One is, you know, they make it very clear that they don't think that we can simply cut our way out of our state budget problems, that it requires revenue and spending cuts in order to manage that. And I think they say that a couple of times. They're very clear about that. And then I'm sorry. Getting used to my technology. One of the other things that they talked about is business costs, which again runs counter to a lot of the discussion that we hear both in the media and in a lot of our political statements, and that our business costs are lower than those in Wisconsin and Ohio, higher than Missouri. No great shock that we would be higher than Missouri, but that we're not really that out of line with what goes on around the nation. And again, I just wanted to highlight that because I think it's important for us to recognize that an impartial body looking at our state would say that. And then finally, with regard to something that's topical right now, and the impact of right-to-work laws in states, and they were pretty clear that the effects on economic growth are not clear from data that are out there, and that there are that even if they do have an impact in bringing businesses to a particular state, that they tend to, I'm going to use their words, erode wages and lead to a more uneven distribution of the gains of economic growth. Again, pretty opposite of what I would hear in the political rhetoric around these days. So I just wanted to highlight those things, and I appreciate that that you guys do this, that allow Moody's to do this and provide us this information, because I do feel like it's an impartial look at what our problems and our positives are. Thank you.
Thank you,
Ed. Thanks a lot for.
We have one more seeking recognition. Representative Burke. Excuse me.
You're cutting into my talking about.
I'll make it quick. I've got two questions.
Yeah.
With some of the consumer, the comparisons of the consumer factors, the retail sales and home starts, how do you square the growth that we're having now with the fact that you're comparing it to an era of wild spending and growth that was fueled not by reality but by credit?
Right.
And so we're in a different situation now. People aren't using their credit cards as much. People aren't taking out the home loan, the home mm-hmm. equity loans and whatnot. So how do you make an accurate comparison when they're two different economic climates?
Well, I think that's good. I mean, because no, consumer right. balance sheets and business balance sheets were way out of whack.
No, absolutely.
So but, I think it's healthy that they are paying down some of this.
But how would we ever, get to the housing starts of 2005? You know, I mean, we're never, I don't know about never, but in the near future, we're not.
Well, I think
the
whole society is changing. There was an article not that long ago in the Tribune that says there's more renters in Chicago now right. than buyers.
So I guess my question shocks me.
I remember when every building in Chicago right. went condo.
Is that moderate growth necessarily bad, I guess, is what I'm saying. Okay. And then you have a note with the single-family home sales that the housing prices have recovered, not only erasing previous declines but reaching new highs.
Right.
Do you find
these are national numbers.
Right. In Illinois, are you finding that that's segmented? You know, I would say maybe even the tail of three states, Chicago and in the center and some of the more prosperous neighborhoods, and then the rest of the region. And
a lot of it's been high-end.
Yeah.
A lot, because they're the people that can get, even with mortgage rates ridiculously low, they're the people that
right.
that can get the money. But I don't think even in Chicago, I live in a 30-story high-rise, our prices have, and I'm the treasurer, so I have to sign off on first right of refusal on every sale we make, and we're not back to where we were.
Okay.
I mean, a lot better than we had
right.
been.
So it's still uneven, I guess, is what we're saying. Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Representative. And one more question, Senator Staines.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you very much. So I'm new, so I'm going to apologize for this question because I might just not understand the overall sort of what we generally include in here or not. I'm just wondering, do you ever look at social, the just sort of differences in income growth and where it's happening in this kind of an economic? Does that have any relevance to the way we're looking at our economy in Illinois? And the reason I ask that is, you know, we hear a lot about just sort of the growing inequality on income and how most of the wage growth has been captured by a very small percentage of the population, and the lower percent, you know, really isn't getting any wage growth. And how does that are we seeing that in Illinois? And does that play into any of these economic factors that we see here? And is that something we should be looking at?
I'm gonna take this.
Jim's gonna take it.
A lot of the
Jim, before you start in, and I apologize, would you just state your sure. background in two or three sentences? And I should have asked you, Mr.
Jim Mashinsky. I'm the revenue manager at COGFA for something like that, huh? There's been a lot of questions here. I think could be answered with the commission's monthly revenue briefing of last month, where the wage pressures are or aren't. Where the employment has lagged and accelerated. By and large, Representative Riley, you're right, government employment is one of the sectors that have seen a decline over the last 2, 4, 6 year increments that we have here. We have some other measures here showing that while jobs have improved, the jobs they're at now are probably less paying than what they were when they were working. So a lot of that information is actually in that monthly. I would probably answer a lot of those. Does that answer your question?
Is that relevant to the overall economic growth we see, how that disparity is growing or not? Like, is there a relationship there? I'm just not an economist and sort of just wonder what your take is on that. And that does, and I'll definitely look forward to making sure I'm reading these every month as well.
Relationship between
if there is in fact growing disparity between wages in the top and the bottom to overall economic growth, is that something that is a factor or not? I mean, I'm really just sort of wondering how that plays.
You know, the disparity has grown over the last several years between the top and the bottom, and even the middle class. A lot of that's the only place, and government's been fooling around. I'll get my little, you know, with zero interest rates. Which not only affects the poor, but reflects those on fixed income. Here I am. But the stock market was doing well. So some people are doing very, very well. People who have access to credit are doing very well. And so this disparity continues to grow. Now, hopefully we'll get federal government and the Federal Reserve and so forth out of the picture and go back to let the market determine where interest rates are going to be. not you buying everything up that the government can create to keep interest rates at zero. Makes no sense. Look what it's doing to housing right now. Even with a small uptick in mortgage rates, housing affordability has dropped like a rock. I mean, it's slowing in an area that we've got to be counting on to grow. So you're right, there is a big disparity. How you solve it, I'm not 100% sure. I've got my own ideas, but they're my ideas. But you're right, it has gotten worse. Disparity.
Does that complete your question, Senator? We need to keep track of, watch the time
sure.
here. It'll soon be time for session. Sure have appreciated this discussion. Representative Riley had asked to speak again.
I just want to say real quick, anytime you look at longitudinal data and start comparing it, let's face it, you could have footnotes all along, you know, that trend line simply because policies, not necessarily market forces, affect how things ebb and flow. And that's, you know, extremely important. And I think that Senator Staines asked a really good question because those things do have an impact on, you know, on all of this, you know, frankly. And so, in your attempt to get equal time, which you're not, I'll let you go ahead.
I thought you came here to listen to me, and it's the Ed Show. That's all right.
Thank you, Representative Riley. And with that, Mr. Machetsky, if you go ahead.
Sure.
And again, we're short on time.
That's okay.
It's fascinating, great information you're providing, both of you.
I'm going to skip some of the earlier slides and go right to page 23, which is the Commission's updated forecast for fiscal year 15. Then I'll just quickly go through some of the major revisions. Hopefully, over the last year, you've been able to read some of the monthly revenue briefings we put out. Kind of explains how things are happening from month to month. Personal income, corporate income, sales taxes, the big three, we like to call them, overall have performed about as expected. Personal and sales have generally met and even exceeded their earlier expectations. I'm on 22 is a nice new table we're putting together, but I'm going to use 23 in the interest of time. So the big three, by and large, overall, is doing about what we expected. There's a little bit of downward pressure net, but personal income tax on a gross basis being revised up 50. Corporate income tax has underperformed this fiscal year, and that's being revised down $247 million. The reasons are, we think, likely due to corporate profits not quite meeting expectations, as well as the impact of the NOL deduction coming back online. We don't know precisely yet. The data is not in, but we think, and I just saw the Department of Revenue's quarterly report, and they seem to think that as well. Sales taxes continues to do quite well, probably in the second year now of a pretty good sales tax receipts. Again, you lump those big three together, though, and there's not much in the way of net change. Inheritance tax is being revised up $95 million, likely due to the wealth effect, you know, market conditions right now. Asset valuations are, of course, higher than what they were even a year ago. Other sources is being revised up $106 million. This has to do with a one-time court settlement that the Attorney General was able to get via some pharmaceutical companies. This occurred in July, so this is our opportunity to include that in the forecast. Riverboat transfers continue to underperform, although just a minor $10 million revision at this time. The refund fund transfer. When the House Joint Resolution 100 was passed, which became the General Assembly's revenue forecast for fiscal year 15, it was expected that $100 million in refund fund transfers would be available. At the end of the day, only $63 million was in that fund to transfer, so we need to make that adjustment to reflect actual transfers. Interfund borrowing. As you know, the fiscal year 15 budget granted the governor the authority to enter into interfund borrowing up to $650 million. To this point in time, the governor, both the last and the current governor, have not acted on that, and nor do they plan to, according to the budget book that just came out last week. So at this point, we are removing that from the forecast. If we need to add that back in or a proxy, obviously we've been hearing about fund sweeps as well, then we will do so. But since he is the originator of those interfund borrowing agreements, we've taken it out at this point. Federal sources. Now, here's one where if you've read the monthlies, you've seen month after month after month, federal sources have underperformed the same period of last year. We need to make a significant downward revision there to the tune of $597 million. And really, at the end of the day, I wouldn't be surprised if that's even not enough of a downward revision. A combination of earlier in the fiscal year, a lot of the Medicaid spending took place on the non-general funds, like the provider assessment fund, the provider relief funds. Now we're into the second half of the fiscal year, but it's also the point in time now where the lower income tax rates have kicked in. We're going to be losing general funds revenue from here on out. It's going to be harder and harder to make up those losses in the, on the general funds side of life. So we need to make a large revision there. You net all the changes up, and it results in a $1.253 billion reduction from the House Joint Resolution 100. And the new figure stands at $34.099 billion. How does that compare with the GOMB and the governor's numbers just released last month? That's on page 24. Really, there's very little differences now between the two agencies. The income tax estimate for personal is virtually the same. We continue to be a little more pessimistic on the corporate income tax side of life. But sales taxes, we're a little bit more optimistic, taking into account current trends. There's really not many large discrepancies. We're a little bit higher in inheritance tax, a little bit higher in other sources, a little bit lower in other transfers, a little bit higher in riverboats. But as you can see, all of the nets here equal only a difference of $30 million, with us being just slightly higher than GOMB. Moving into fiscal year 16, on page 25, it's a nice little summary table, kind of breaks everything down into the big three, all other, transfers, and federal. And you can see the forecast for fiscal year 16 is $32.139 billion, which is an additional fall off of $1.960 billion. Obviously takes into account the annualizations associated with the income tax rates, which started to go down in January of this year. Those nets are $2.511 billion. Other state sources, we don't get that one-time receipt from the court settlements we got this year, so that gets you an $88 million decline in other state sources. Transfers in, we don't get any refund fund transfer next year, so that makes up the majority of that $93 million difference. Federal sources, we're utilizing the figures that GOMB has put into the budget book under their maintenance automatic autopilot budget for federal sources, $4.408 billion. That may prove too optimistic, but given the uncertainty associated with federal sources via what's the actual appropriation going to be, what are the cash receipts that we'll actually have available for spending on those reimbursable programs, what is the comptroller actually going to spend the dollars on? And then also, of course, the uncertainty associated with the governor's proposed cuts to the Medicaid program. There's a lot of uncertainty there. So we're going to present this essentially in two ways. The $4.408 billion is the current autopilot maintenance budget. But then as we turn the page, actually, I'm going to turn you to page 27 because 26 just breaks down the forecasts in a more detailed way. But on page 27, it compares our forecast with that of GOMB, and we've done it two ways. The top part on each of the columns here is the maintenance-based budget. So our forecast of 32.139 stacks up against their 32.049. We're, again, very close. Only $90 million separates the two agencies. That's less than 0.3%. Everybody kind of sees the things going the same way in terms of the underpinnings of the economy and the revenue trends. So there's really not much discrepancy there. We're a little bit higher in personal, a little bit lower in corporate, and a little bit higher in sales. But we've also included the governor's proposed changes to the fiscal year 16 revenues should they pass. He would redirect some current public utility tax revenue that goes to some other funds, state funds, back into general revenue. The value of those is approximately $175 million. He's proposing a significant change in the, the reimbursement rates and other programmatic changes to the Medicaid program, which, if passed, would significantly reduce the amount of federal sources coming into the general funds. The view there, it's valued at $1.107 billion. And then finally, and I haven't really talked about this, so let me get into this a little bit. He proposes, once again, keeping the amount of money that we currently direct to the two new created funds this February, the Fund for the Advancement of Education and the Commitment to Human Services Fund. He proposes, once again, retaining those into the general funds. So that would add about $885 million to the estimate. The bottom line, though, when you net out all of these proposed changes, it's only about a $46 to $49 million reduction from the base amount. So the impact overall isn't huge, although by component you could see some significant changes one way or the other to the maintenance budget that we or the maintenance revenue presentation that we have. In terms of those two new funds, they just started to receipt that money as of February. February was the very first month that those monies were now being directed to those funds rather than going into general revenue. And, of course, next year then, instead of 5 months, you're going to see 12 months of that. So that's why there's an incremental cost associated with a full year of those. I don't want to call them diversions. It's just a redirection of general funds personal income tax. So that's essentially what I have here. From here on out, there's just a lot of tables of historical information and that type of thing. But any questions, I'd be happy to try to answer.
Both of these reports were outstanding. I appreciate both of you. I would just remind members, we're just a few minutes from both chambers needing to start or scheduled to start. Right, and we're scheduled for a picture. no one seeking recognition, I would please note on the agenda, next meeting, April 14th, 10 a.m., and it will be a longer meeting, overview and review of contracts for the administration of the FY 2016 State Employees Group Insurance Program. No one seeking recognition.
I want to thank Senator. Jim. I just want to thank Jim and Ed. And Jim, I heard you say optimistic at least three times. So so thank you for your in-depth report.
Senator, with that, the meeting will stand adjourned.